And although last week we started the Chazar of Hilchas Amir La'akum, this week we're going to continue it. Mirtz Hashem, after the break next week, we will then start the new set of halachas, which is going to take us until the end of this month. So now we're up to our review of Hilchas Amir La'nachri. What happens when you have a makom mitzvah? What happens when I have a mitzvah consideration and I want to observe the mitzvah? I would not be allowed to do so myself, but I want to ask the Nachri to help facilitate my observance of that mitzvah. Would I be allowed to ask a Nachri to help me on Shabbos? Or perhaps Amir LeNachri would be applicable to that as well. So we have two conflicting Gemaras. The Gemara number one in Maseches Gittin writes that if somebody wants to buy a home in Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara tells us that I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to sign the contract for me on Shabbos. Really? I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to sign the contract for me on Shabbos? Isn't that an Isser De'araisa? Isn't that Ksiva? Now, obviously, if I write the contract and I sign, that would be an Isser De'araisa. But for me to ask a non-Jew to sign the contract would be an Isser De'rabanan of Amira LeNachri. I'm asking the non-Jew to violate an Isser De'araisa in order that I should be able to buy a piece of real estate in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Gemara, no, you're allowed to. Why? Because Mishamisha of Eretz Yisrael, it is permissible. Now, what does that mean? It seems to say that Amira LeNachri is permissible, B'makom mitzvah, and that is why the Gemara says I would be allowed to do that. We now turn to a Gemara Maseches Erevin, where the Gemara says that they used to have a belief in the times of Chazal that in order to have a healthy bris milah without getting any infection, the belief was that you had to make sure that the baby was bathed with hot water before and after the bris milah. So the Gemara says, here we are on a Shabbos, and we're about to observe the mitzvah of bris milah. The child was born by Yom HaShmini, the eighth day is on Shabbos, and now we're about to do it, and we realize ishtapech chamime. The water has spilled, and we don't have any hot water available for the child after the bris milah is completed. So, obviously, if I did the bris milah, and now the water spills, so that's considered to be a sakana. And for the sake of a sakana, I would be allowed to do anything. Same way I'm allowed to drive to the hospital and violate an issa d'araisa on my own, I'd be allowed to heat up the water also if I felt it was a real sakana. But here we're saying that it's before the bris milah took place. The water spilled, and I know from the outset that I don't have hot water. So the Gemara says, I would be allowed to go ask a Nachri to go to the neighbor and bring hot water from their urn, from their hot water tank, and carry it over to mine. Whoa, one second. Why carry it over? Isn't there a much simpler idea? What's the simpler idea? Tell the non-Jew to heat up water in my house. Why does he have to carry it from across the street, across the town? Why can't he just go into my house, heat up some hot water in the bathtub, and assume that that would be good enough? Why does the Gemara say he has to go to the neighbor to get the water? What's the reason for that? So the Rishonim say it would seem that I would not be allowed to ask the non-Jew to heat up the water himself in my house. The most I'm allowed to do is ask him to walk through a karmelis, which is only considered a Rishus HaYachim in the Rabbanan. I would only be allowed to ask him to do that, and Amir LeNachri would not permit me to do any kind of malacha. So this is a stira, this is a contradiction. On the one hand, the Gemara says in Gittin that in order to buy a piece of property, a piece of real estate in Eretz Yisrael, I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew explicitly to sign the contract even if it's on Shabbos. On the other hand, the Gemara says for the mitzvah of bris milah, I would not be allowed to ask the Nachri to go and heat up the water. The most I would be allowed to do is ask him to go across town and get some water and bring it to me. So what's the reason? So the answer is, the Rishonim give two different approaches. Approach number one is that of the Rif and the Rambam and other Gedolei HaRishonim, that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is considered in a league of its own. Which is interesting. I would have thought that bris milah is in a league of its own. It says that bris milah is nechusu alav yud gimel brisos. It says that bris milah and arel lo yochabo, he's not allowed to eat carbon pesach. You would think bris milah is so critical. But yet the Gemara says, although bris milah is very important, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is in a league of its own. And therefore, for the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael to buy a piece of real estate away from a Nachri in Eretz Yisrael, I'd be allowed to violate Amira the Nachri on an Issa D'araisa. He's allowed to write on Shabbos in order that we should buy the piece of property. That should not be transferred over to other mitzvahs. And that's why when it comes to bris milah, you would not be allowed to do that. The most, the maximum we'd allow you to do is a shvus to shvus, which means a double derabanan. So you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to do something for you. That's derabanan number one. What I'm asking him to do is only an issa derabanan because he's carrying through a place which is only a rishus midirabanan. That's one way to answer the question, that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is in a league of its own. All other mitzvahs are considered to be parallel, but we'd only allow all other mitzvahs to be violated, ayideh Amir LeNachri for an Issa D'Rabbanan. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, we would allow Amir LeNachri even for an Issa D'Araisa. On the other hand, the Bala Iter is quoted in the Ramah as saying that, no, Amir Lenachri on an Issa Daraisa is permissible for all mitzvahs. And what you see from the Gemara by buying the property in Eretz Yisrael is that we can take that halacha and translate it to any other case. And any other case means any time I have a mitzvah opportunity that presents itself and somebody would violate an Issa Daraisa in order for me to be able to observe it, I'd be allowed to do that. There's no problem at all. And this Gemara and Erevin by the Bris Milah, they reinterpret the Gemara that it means something else. But the real sugya that we have to focus on, the Rishonim say, is that one with regard to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And from there we learn to everything else. How do we paskin? The Shulchan Aruch says, no, we paskin like the Rif and the Rambam, that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is in a league of its own. You're not allowed to do Amir L'Nachri on a Nisra D'Araisa, unless it's for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. For any other mitzvah, we'd allow you to do Amir L'Nachri only on a Nisra D'Rabbanan. Now, the Ramah then adds in that we're familiar with the fact that the Bala Iter has this opinion, that he reinterprets the Gemara and he says, no, you'd be allowed to violate anything. So he says, maybe memakom tzarech gadol, or memakom tzarech rabim, the Mishnah Berurah says, then I'd allow even an Issa D'Araisa to be violated with Amir L'Nachri. That is the way that the Ramah says it, that we would really limit this to a situation where it's a major, major tzarech. Then we would rely on the Bala Iter. Otherwise, we should rely on the opinion of the Rif and the Rambam, who say that this is limited to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, there's a question, how do you determine what is considered a tzarech rabim? How many people is considered a rabim? How many people do you need? Very good question. But anyway, it doesn't make a difference right now. Just the concept is very important. When does this come up? Let's say, for example, the lights go out in the shul. And the lights go out in the shul, Rav Moshe says, I'm not able to read my siddur. Now, not everybody knows the davening by heart, so not everybody's going to be able to daven, but we're all in shul, and we can't see. So what are we supposed to do? So Rav Moshe says, in a situation like that, that is certainly considered to be a tzarech rabim, and you'd be allowed to ask an achri to turn on the lights, even though by doing so, he might be violating an issa d'araisa. Again, now we have LED lights, it's different, but when you had real bulbs that got hot, that was potentially an Isser of Bishul when he turned it on, or Havara, whatever it might be. In a situation like that, we would assume that you'd be allowed to do so, because that's a major Tzarech Rabim. The whole community is here, and they all need lights because they can't read in the Siddur. So we would assume that that would be permissible. And the same applies, let's say it's too cold in the Shul, and you need somebody to turn on the air conditioner or off the air conditioner. It's too hot in Shul, too cold in Shul. We can't stay in this condition. So in a situation like that, Rav Moshe writes as well that we would be allowed to ask a Nachri to turn on the air conditioner if it's too hot, to turn off the air conditioner if it's too cold, even though that might be touching on an Issa D'Araisa, because we rely on the Bala Iter when there's a major Shasat Chak, when there's a major emergency, and that would certainly be one of the cases that we would permit. Now what happens, the Mishnah Berurah writes, if you have somebody who has a stroller that needs to get to shul, so would you be allowed to ask a Nachri to wheel the stroller to shul? So, the Mishnah Berurah says, the truth is that most of our streets today are only Rishus Hayachim Midrabanan. You're not violating a real Issa D'Araisa anyway. So he says that there's a real legitimate Shasat Chak, if there's a Tzarech Gadol, then we would allow you to bring the stroller, to ask a Nachri to bring the stroller through the streets, violate an Issa D'Rabanan, and bring the stroller to shul. However, the Mishnah Berurah says, what happens if you want a non-Jew to carry the baby to shul on the day of his Bris Milah? So what would you say? Is that a Shasat Chak or not? Mishnah Berurah says, why is it a Shasat Chak? Do the Bris Milah in the house. What's the emergency? Do the Bris in the house. No problem. So my Bris Milah was actually on a Shabbos, and my Bris was in a house. At the time, there was no Erev in Washington Heights, and my Bris Milah was Shabbos morning, and we lived 10 minutes away from YU, so everybody davened in yeshiva, and then they walked to the house afterward for the Bris. Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Sabalovsky actually walked from Riverdale. So they always remind me that they really went out of the way. It was a big machlokas because my father disagrees with Rabbi Willig about how to draw the trum lines. So he holds that Rabbi Willig went out of the trum by coming over to the heights. And Rabbi Willig holds that, no, you make a square, you make a box differently. It's an interesting ongoing debate that I've had for many, many years. I'm now 36. I turned 36 this week. So for 36 years at least, this has been a discussion, maybe even longer, about how you draw the trum coming out of Manhattan, spilling over to Riverdale. Is that all considered part of one trum, or is it two different places? Anyway, that the Mishnah Berurah says, would not be considered a tzarech gadol, because there's a very easy option. But let's say we have a sheva brachas in the shul, and there's no other way to get the family there. I don't know if that's a tzarech gadol or not, but there's no other way to have everybody eat in the house. That's not going to be an option. It's too many people. So in a situation like that, if the only way to do it is to have a nachri push the stroller when there's no eruv, that would be something that we would be permit. The Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa gives another example. What if a person does not have any hot food on Shabbos? So we know there's an Indian who's supposed to have hot food on Shabbos to show that you're not from the Tzdukim. I remember when I was in Yeshiva, in the Mir Yeshiva, one of the Rashi Yeshiva was Rabbi Elia Baruch Finkel. So Rabbi Elia Baruch Finkel tragically passed away at a young age. He had a heart attack one night in the middle of the night. It was actually my last night in Yeshiva that he died. In the dormitory, I was sleeping right in the room right on top of him. It was a crazy evening. Anyway, Rabbi Elia Baruch Finkel, I was once eating by his house, and I remember, I think Lavi Greenspan had come to Eretz Yisrael at the time. He told me he wants to eat by Rabbi Elia Baruch Finkel. I asked him, he said, sure. So we went together to Rabbi Elia Baruch. So we came there, and he offered him some challen. Lavi happened not to be in the mood. He didn't want any. So, okay, what's the big deal? So he said, I don't want. So Rabbi Elia Baruch said, I have to check into your yichus. So he said, what are you talking about? So he said, I don't know. I don't know if you're really Jewish or not. Well, you don't want some challen? So he said, so Lavi was laughing. It was a cute joke. He said, no, it's true. The Ramah says that on Shabbos, everybody has to eat something hot. Why? To show that I'm not from the Tzdukim. To show that I believe when the Torah says, Lo sevaru esh b'chamash v'sechem yama Shabbos, when the Torah says you're not allowed to have a fire, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to have fire lit in your house. It means I'm not allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. So the Tzdukim took it so far as to mean, very literally, they didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. So they believe that the Torah, if it says, Lo sevaru esh b'chamash v'sechem, it means you're not allowed to have any fire in your house. So no lights, no fires, no ovens, no stoves, no platas, nothing. So they have only cold food. The Ramah says we should go out of our way to show that we're not part of those people who live life like that, that we do believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, that we do believe in Chazal's interpretation of the Pasuk, and as a result of that, we go out of our way to eat hot food on Shabbos. Person goes and says, I don't want any chalent on Shabbos, so then drink a tea, have something else. You have to show that you really believe that Lo Sevaru Esh B'chamash V'Sechem B'Yom HaShabbos is the way that we live it, is the way that we interpret it. So here, writes the Shmir Shabbos Kechasa, if a person doesn't have hot food, so would you say that's a Tzarech Gadol or not? Interesting question. On the one hand, I would say, what's the big deal? You can live a Shabbos without hot food, everyone will be fine. You don't have your tea, you don't have your chalent, everyone's okay. But says the Shmir Shabbos Kechasa, no, this is considered a Tzarech Gadol for Shabbos. And therefore you'd be allowed to ask a Nachri to carry the food from a neighbor who has hot food and wants to give you some, even though there's no Erev outside, I'd be allowed to do so because that is considered a Tzarech Gadol, and that would be permissible. Say, for example, writes Rav Moshe, I left the refrigerator light on, and now every time I want to take something in and out of the fridge, I have to worry because the light is going to go on and the light's going to go off. So I'm not going to be able to have any food on Shabbos. So you can say, no big deal. I have enough food around. I have food in the pantry. I have crackers. I have bread. I have other things. So I don't really need the refrigerator. Says Rav Moshe, that's unreasonable. That's not a normal Shabbos. For a person to spend Shabbos not having anything from the refrigerator, no cold drinks, nothing, no salad, nothing else that I keep in the fridge, that would be something that is very uncomfortable. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, I'd be allowed to ask a Nachri to open the refrigerator, to unscrew the bulb, or to do something to make sure that I don't have this problem that is considered to be a Tzarech Gadol. And says Rav Moshe, even if it means that I'm asking him to do a Malacha De'araisa, he says, for example, the light in the refrigerator is a bulb, and by taking it out, it's makaba patish, whatever it might be, a real malacha, that would be something that would be permissible. Now, from there we move on. Instead of talking about what happens when I have a tzorech mitzvah, and the nachri is able to help me observe the mitzvah by doing something along the way that can help me do it, what happens when I have a hefsid meruba? What happens when I have a great loss of money? Now, in general, hefsid meruba is a very subjective concept, and it applies not only here, it applies also what I find most relevant. I never get a shy than hefsid merubah on Shabbos when someone's going to have something destroyed. Either they don't come and ask because they do it anyway because they don't want to lose it, or because it doesn't happen so often. But where I do get shy of hefsid merubah very often is with regard to stam yenam. So the Shulchan Aruch has a whole discussion, what happens if I have non-kosher wine. Somebody gives me non-kosher wine and as a gift. It's not malicious. They didn't know that they should look for a wine with the hashgacha. So somebody gives me a gift of non-kosher wine, what am I allowed to do with it? So very often, we say to ourselves, look, obviously I'm not going to drink the non-kosher wine, but let me go to my office and give it to one of my coworkers, let me give it to my boss, let me give it to somebody else who's with me, someone who I'm friendly with, the mailman, the doorman, whoever it might be, maybe I should give it away. So that's a big question. Why? Because we assume stam yenam is aser bahana. We assume that when you have non-kosher wine, it's asur ba'ana. You're not supposed to derive benefit from it. Certainly you're not allowed to drink it. It's not kosher. But you're not supposed to have benefit from it either, unless there's a hefsid merubah. Now, what does a hefsid merubah mean? That's a very good question. If you're the kind of person that has no problem wasting money on lots of other things, so if you have a $50 bottle of wine or a $100 bottle of wine and you would waste $50 or $100 anyway on other things, so then it's not such a hefsid merubah for you to waste money on this. But if $50 or $100 means something to you, and everything else you do in your life, you would take that very seriously. You wouldn't just let it go. So then, in this situation as well, I would say that that would be considered a hefsid merubah. So that's something that's, again, very subjective. You know, it depends depends how you look at things in general, and that's really going to impact the way that it works here as well. So with regard to Hilchos Shabbos and Amir La'akum, when we say b'makom hefsid merubah, there might be a dispensation. How do you define a hefsid merubah? Very hard to say, but it really depends very much on the particular kind of home and the kind of lifestyle that you live. Question? That is true. Nasata d'varech l'shiurim. Sometimes you do nasata d'varech l'shiurim. The Gemara does say, just to explain the question, the Gemara does say sometimes that we have to make a uniform halacha that applies across the board to everyone. Why? Because if not, then nasata d'varech l'shiurim. What are you going to say? This person keeps Shabbos like this, and this person keeps Shabbos like that. And this person, you know, a kezias for them is this size, and a kezias for the other person, that doesn't make sense. You have to have very definitive measures. You have to have very definitive halachas that this way, whoever I am, wherever I live, whichever part of the community I'm a part of, that's what I'm going to be following, and everyone's going to have the same uniform standard. So that's true. The Gemara does say that that is a consideration sometimes, but over here, hefsed merubah is a case where we find not so. The Shulchan Aruch does say that there's a concept of hefsed merubah, and the Acharonim explain that it really is dependent. It really is dependent on the person. And that's what I say all the time. Sometimes you have a person who says, oh, I'm an expert in this area of halacha. They studied Hilchos Mikvos, and they know it very well. They really don't know anything about halacha in other contexts. But, you know, they spent a lot of time focusing on this, and they think that they're expert on that. Somebody spent a lot of time learning Hilchos Nida. Somebody spent a lot of time learning Hilchos Kashrus. Whatever you focus on. And then they think that, of course I can paskin a shayla in Hilchos Basar B'Chalav. Why not? It's a good thought. Where's the mistake? The mistake is actually here sometimes, because let's say in defining what is a Shas HaDchak. Sometimes in Hilchos Basar B'Chalav we'll say, if it's a major Shas HaDchak, we could be Mekel. If you're not familiar in other areas of Halacha how we define a Shas HaDchak, if you don't really have Shimush and understanding what is considered an extenuating circumstance and what is not, then it's very hard to apply that to another area of Halacha that you're just totally unfamiliar with. So that's why it's important that you have many different disciplines and many different areas of Limud, Halacha, but you have to really know where there's a cross-section and where perhaps it's not the same at all. So the Shulchan Aruch does say that I'm allowed to ask a Nachri to do a Shvus to Shvus. I'm allowed to ask a Nachri to do a double Durabbanan, which means that if I asking a Nachri to do something for me on Shabbos is an Issa Durabbanan. But if I'm asking him to carry it through a place that doesn't have an Erev, let's say, in our communities, so that would be something that B'makam Tzarech Gadol, or a Hefsid Merubah. So then I'd be allowed to ask the Nachri to do that. For example, if I have a diamond necklace and it falls off on Shabbos in the middle of the street, so there's no Erev, so I'm not allowed to carry it. But what happens? Can I ask a Nachri that passes by? Obviously, I have to be afraid somebody might steal it. If I wait till the end of Shabbos, someone's certainly going to take it. So what do I do? So the Shulchan Aruch says I'd be allowed to ask a Nachri to pick it up and to bring it to my house. How can I do that? So it says because it's a Hefsid Merubah. And if it's a Hefsid Merubah, you'd be allowed to violate a Shvus to Shvus. Why? Shulchan Aruch says the reason why is because we're concerned that if you're not going to be allowed to ask a Nachri, you're going to do it yourself. I'm not going to let the diamond necklace stay there the rest of Shabbos. I'm going to make sure that it gets back to me. So either I'm going to do the malacha myself, or you're going to allow me to ask a Nachri to do it for me. Reminds me, I was a few weeks ago, it has nothing to do with anything, I shouldn't even say the story. Very funny story though. I was at somebody's house a few weeks ago, and they said it was their wife's birthday, and they were on their way back from work and totally forgot about the birthday. And they're very into birthdays in their family, they always have gifts. And they were very concerned. What do I do? I'm going to come home. My wife is going to be furious at me that I forgot about her birthday. So he remembered that his next door neighbor has a Judaica store and some silver Judaica, whatever it is. So he thought that he should maybe call the neighbor, and the neighbor would be able to package something up quickly, and he'll get it on his way home, and he'll bring it in. Fine. So he calls up the neighbor. He says, emergency, I don't know what to do. I know it's already 6 o'clock. You're out of the store, but do you have anything in the house? I don't want you to go be matriarch to open the store, but do you have anything in the house that I can give my wife? She says, yeah, let me look around. Calls back. Yes, I have a Kiddush cup. Beautiful, with flowers on it. It's really nice. Says, great, pack it up. Put some ribbons on it. I'm going to pick it up in a few minutes, and I'll give it to my wife. Fine, comes home. Says to his wife, oh, happy birthday, sweetheart. I'm so happy. It's your birthday. Oh, and I went out of my way. I bought this thing for you. His wife opens it up and sees a Kiddush cup. She says, why is this a birthday present? This is for you. You're going to use this, not me. So he was stumped. He didn't know what to say. He says, you know, the truth is, you're right. But from now on, anytime I say Kiddush on Friday night, it's in your honor. Fine. A few months went by, and then it was his birthday. So she said, you know, she went out and bought herself a set of diamond earrings. And the husband says, oh, you know, what's the happy birthday? She says, every time I wear these, it's in your honor. So a very sweet couple. So that's what I was reminded of, this story. Very interesting story. But anyway, it reminds me of another story, actually, that happened in Eretz Yisrael. There was somebody who passed by a $100 bill in the middle of the street in Bnei Brak on Shabbos. Did I ever say this here? I don't remember. So he passed by this $100 bill, and he wanted to take it. But you know, it's Shabbos, so what's he going to do? He's not going to take it. It's Muktzah. It's no Erev, whatever it is. So he stands there on the side, and he's watching it. He said he figured he'll stand here for a few hours till the end of Shabbos, and you know, he'll wait till the end of Shabbos and get it. Then he notices, after standing there for an hour, there's another guy standing on the other side of the street, also watching it. So he goes over to him, he says, listen, both of us are standing here. There's no reason both of us should stand in the sweltering heat in the middle of the summer in Bnei Brak. How about let's make a deal? One of us will wait here, and we'll split it. We know each other. You know, after Shabbos, I'll give you $50. It's fine. He says, a good idea. I trust you, and it's not a problem at all. So you can take it, or you can wait here, I'll wait here, whatever. You wait a little, I'll wait a little, and we're, you know, you'll give me $50 after Shabbos. Okay, comes after Shabbos. He picks up the dollar bill, and the whole thing was fake. So he wanted to know. He said, I'm going to give you $50. So was he machayev? Was he obligating himself to give him $50? Or was he only saying, no, on the assumption that I get 100, I'm going to give you 50. Which reminds me of a third shaila that has mamish nothing to do with anything, but interesting. You know that in New York State, two people just called me about this yesterday, and I'm sick to my stomach that Jews somehow figure out how to do all these things. But anyway, so somebody called me yesterday, and then somebody else followed up with the same question. That apparently just became legal to do betting here in New York State, right? So they told me that there's a website where you can bet online, and they had a deal. They want to try to get people to be on. You know what I'm talking about? So maybe you've heard about this shtick. He did?
Yeah.
Oh, so I didn't hear what he said. Okay, somebody called me just yesterday. I didn't have a chance to work on it. So this person told me that this website matches dollar for dollar up to $3,000. If you put $3,000 into a betting arena, they'll match a $3,000 to the $3,000 you got. Now, you can bet on whatever it is. Someone wins, someone loses, right? So the idea now, betting, gambling is something that is not permissible. Mesachei Pekuvia, we assume, is usur. It's not allowed. And it would disqualify a person from being an aid. You're not a kosher Jew if you go gambling. It's not right. Not allowed. Clear in Shulchan Aruch, clear in the Gemara. Not permissible to gamble. Oh, so where was his idea? He had a great idea. He said he spoke to a friend of his, and he's going to put in $3,000. His friend's going to put in $3,000. Both of them have no interest in betting. But both of them obviously are going to get the match. So now it's going to be $12,000. So what happens? They're going to bet against each other. Now when you bet against each other, someone has to win and someone has to lose, obviously. But they made a deal in advance that whoever wins, whoever loses, we're going to split the pot. So what happened? One of them bets this way, one of them bets the other way. Then, obviously, one wins and one loses. And then it turns out he walks away with $12,000, right? And he splits. He gives 6 to his friend and 6 to himself. And they came out on top, $3,000. Everyone follow that? Is that what he spoke about?
I mean, he said based on the stealing.
So I asked this person, I said, there are no terms and conditions. It doesn't say clearly what their intent was when they're willing to match the funds. It doesn't make, they're not that silly. I mean, it's just hard for me to imagine that they're so silly. He says, no, I read it over and over again. It doesn't say anywhere. I don't know. You shouldn't be involved in betting anyway. It just doesn't sound like the right thing to do, and it's addictive. Just not a good idea. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting shaila. How it ties into Amir Lenachi is a very good question. But anyway, we assume that when you have a major hefsid meruba, we assume that when you have a major potential loss of money, that would be something that, I don't think this is working, right? That would be something that we would generally say that the Nachri would be allowed to be asked to do so in order to save you from a major hefsid meruba on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch talks about also what happens if I have not a hefsid meruba, it's not my money, I'm not going to lose, it's not my diamond necklace in the middle of the street, but rather it's a Sefer Torah that is in danger, or other svarim for that matter. Lav dafka Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is very expensive. What if I have a gemara, a set of shas outside, something like that, and now it's going to rain and it's going to get ruined? So in such a case, the Shulchan Aruch says we have a special dispensation from Amir Lenachri for that as well. And we would assume you'd be allowed to ask a Nachri to do something in order that that should not be destroyed, in order that it shouldn't be ruined. Now, the Shulchan Aruch then continues and says, what happens if I have a situation where there's a machlokes about something? So some Rishonim say it's mutter, some Rishonim say it's aser. Would I be allowed to ask a Nachri to do it for me? Generally, I don't do it. But why can't the Nachri say, I hold like the other opinion, right? Like the famous story. You have a Nachri that's in the process of trying to convert. Now we know the Gemara says, Akum Sheshavas Chayiv Misa. A non-Jew is not allowed to observe Shabbos the way we observe Shabbos. So even while he's in the process of conversion, he has to be Mechal Shabbos. He's not allowed to keep Shabbos fully. So usually we tell the Nachri, turn on some lights. So that's usually what they do. So somebody once comes to a Nachri, he says, I know you're in the process of conversion, but you know you have to be Mechal Shabbos. He says, I was. I carried outside. He says, no, there's an Erev outside. That doesn't help. That's not a Chil Shabbos. He says, no, I don't hold by the Erev. So over here, when we have a Machlokas HaRishonim with regard to something that we generally are Machmir about on Shabbos, we have enough room to say, no, but the Nachri could be Mekel like the other Rishonim. Rashi might not be the way that I paskin, but Rashi can at least be relied upon by the Nachri. So take, for example, Shulchan Aruch says, let's say, many of us have a chumrah that we don't open bottle caps on Shabbos. But there are two opinions, and it's a major dispute in the poskim, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Gemara. It's not so simple whether you're allowed to or not. It's not so pashut. So let's say I'm machmir. Let's say I don't do it, right? I am machmir not to open the cans. I'm machmir not to open the bottles. Am I allowed to ask an anju to do it? Shulchan Aruch says yes. Why? Because there's a legitimate opinion in the Rishonim, a major opinion in the Rishonim that says it's mutter. And therefore that would be something that would be permissible, because you can say that the Nachri is holding like the other opinion in the Rishonim that says it's mutter, and that would be something that would be allowed. Or for example, we learned a couple of months ago what happens with dusting off clothing on Shabbos. So we know there's an iser of kibbutz. You're not allowed to clean clothing on Shabbos. Kibbutz, originally, the malacha was to take a garment, to take a sweater, to put it into the ocean, to put it into the river in a basket, then wring it out. Doing all that malacha, that's real kibbutz d'oraisa. What about wiping off some dust from my jacket? Major machlokas harishonim, whether that's part of the iser of kibbutz or not. Some rishonim say it's mutter. That's not considered a real act of kibbutz. I'm just brushing off some dirt. So let's say I get dirty. So we're machmir, the Ashkenazim are machmir, not to wipe off the dust on Shabbos either. Am I allowed to ask a Nachri to do it? Yes. Why? Because half of the Rishonim legitimately say that I'd be allowed to do so. So therefore I'd be allowed to ask a Nachri to do it as well. Now, there's a whopper of a Chiddush that you find in the Sefer Yalkut Yosef, where he says, there is a Machlokas HaRishonim. We all know that on Shabbos morning, if you have a meat with a lot of gravy in it, you're not allowed to take it out of the refrigerator and heat it up on the plot on Shabbos. Why? Why not? Because that's going to be an act of bishul when you heat up the liquid, the gravy that's inside of the pan. However, there are some Rishonim that say that ein bishul achar bishul afilu v'davar lach. The whole thing was cooked already. I'm not really cooking it now. Everything was cooked. Now it happens to be cold. Now I'm not really re-cooking it by putting it on the fire, by putting it on the plata. So we Ashkenazim are machmir that we don't do that on Shabbos. But there's a major opinion in the Rishonim that says you are allowed to do that on Shabbos, because ein bishul achar bishul at all. Once it's been cooked, you don't have to worry at all. If that's the case, the Yalkut Yosef writes, I'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to take my meat with the gravy out of the refrigerator, put it onto the plata on Shabbos, even though I would never do it. But since there's a legitimate opinion in the Rishonim that says you'd be allowed to, that is something that he has a major, major kula about. The Bir Halacha writes, not so simple. Don't be so quick to do this. Why? Because once I become accustomed to having the meat heated up on Shabbos with the gravy and everything, I'm going to forget. Next time I'm going to do it myself. So don't cut corners unless he says it's a really great tzarech, it's a really great need. Otherwise, it's something that really should be avoided. Question. Could you ask a Svardi to do it? That is a very good question. Would I be allowed to ask a Svardi to do things on Shabbos that I would not be allowed to do? I think some Acharonim say that it depends what kind of Isser I'm talking about. Is it something that I'm just machmir for? Or is it something that we really hold me'ikar adin as Usser? Yeah, so that's That's a very good question, but I think the Mishnah Berurah's concern would still apply. Mishnah Berurah says, if I'm going to become accustomed to doing this all the time, then the next time when I don't have a Sfardi in my house, I'm going to end up doing it myself because I became so used to having this kind of food on Shabbos morning that that might be a problem. We do find that in Halacha there is a special dispensation, Mishum Kavod Abrios. So in Halacha, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos that sometimes when we have a conflict between what the Torah says and my human dignity and my Kavod Abrios, the Halacha is that we are allowed to overlook the din of the Torah, and we focus on the Kavod Abrios, and that is what takes precedence. Not always. There are special rules and regulations when we would say that, when we wouldn't. So take, for example, we know that we're allowed to wear tzitzis on Shabbos even when there's no Erev outside. Why? Because it's a beged. Same way I'm allowed to wear a shirt, so I'm allowed to wear tzitzis, it's a beged. Okay, what happens if my tzitzis rips on Shabbos? What if the strings rip off on Shabbos? So would I be allowed to wear that outside without an Erev or not? What? The Gemara says no. Why? Why wouldn't you be allowed to? Because the only reason why I'm wearing this four-cornered garment is not because I need an extra layer of cloth on me. It's not because I need another shirt. It's not because I need another sweater. The only reason I'm wearing it is because I want to observe the mitzvah of tzitzis, so it's a beged. But now that it's no longer tzitzis, and the only reason why I was wearing it in the first place was because it was tzitzis, so now I'm supposed to take it off because it's no longer a beged. It is now called a masui. It's as if I'm carrying something that I don't need to use. What happens if I'm in the middle of the street and I'm going to be totally embarrassed to start getting undressed in the middle of the street? So that is one example where we find that Kavod Abrios would come into play with regard to Hilchos Shabbos. Take for another example, the Gemara says that we have a prohibition of muktzah on Shabbos. One of the categories of muktzah is something that has no purpose, something that you don't use for any constructive purpose on Shabbos. So the prime example that the Gemara gives of that kind of muktzah is Eitzim Va'avan V'yafer. What are you going to do with dirt and rocks on Shabbos? Nothing. So therefore, that is considered automatically to be in the category of muktzah. Now, says the Gemara, what happens in the days of Chazal, they didn't have toilet paper, and the way that they would wash themselves off was they took a rock and they would wipe their skin. So now a person needs to wipe their skin off because they got some dirt on it, and the only way to do that is with a rock. So what are you going to tell me? It's muktzah? So the Gemara says, no, Mishum Kavod Abrios, we tell a person, you don't have to walk around dirty, your hands don't have to be dirty the whole Shabbos. The way to take care of yourself is to wipe off with rocks. So rocks are not muktzah with regard to this purpose, Mishum Kavod Abrios. So we do have certain examples where we know that Mishum Kavod Abrios, we're going to take away the Isser Derabanan of muktzah or other kinds of prohibitions that we find as well. So here, the Shulchan Aruch says, what happens if I have a Kavod Abrios issue? Would I be allowed to violate Amir al-Nachri? So the Achronim say it would make a lot of sense that I should be allowed to violate Amir al-Nachri. If I'm allowed to violate an Isser Derabanan of muktzah or other kinds of Isserim Derabanan Mishum Kavod Abrios, then certainly I'm allowed to violate the Isser of Amir al-Nachri in the same. That wouldn't be any different. I would assume that that should be permissible as well, Mishum Kavod Abrios. Now, the problem is the Mishnah Berurah writes, not all Kavod Abrios are created equal. Not every situation is considered a major emergency of Kavod Abrios. And what you might consider a Kavod Abrios is not necessarily what I would consider a Kavod Abrios. So again, like you said, Nasata Derech HaLishirim, you have to think very carefully, is this something that's really warranted? Or perhaps I could do without it, and after Shabbos I'll deal with the consequence and it's not such a big deal. In that very same vein, we know that we have a prohibition of Tzar Balei Chaim. Not so simple. Where do we learn the Isser of Tzar Balei Chaim from? If anyone's interested in this issue, if you look in the Minchas Asher on Chumash, he has 36 potential sources of where we learn the Isser of Tzar Balei Chaim. It's not explicit anywhere in the Chumash. Some say we learn it from the story of Bilam, where it says, why do you hit the donkey? So what's wrong with hitting a donkey? I'm allowed to hit a donkey. The answer is no, you're not allowed to hit a donkey unnecessarily, unless there's a reason to. If you're trying to get the donkey to move faster, then you can. But you hit me for no reason. The donkey says to Bilam, who do you think you are? It's Tzar Balei Chaim. So a number of different explanations of where we learn Tzar Balei Chaim, but there is a prohibition of Tzar Balei Chaim. What happens if my animal is in discomfort on Shabbos? So what am I supposed to do? So say, for example, a very important example that some of the Gedolim wrote about in the 1930s when they had the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. It was not established the way things are today. They didn't have businesses running like we have today. But there were many, many people who had dairy farms, and they had cows that had to be milked on Shabbos. What are you going to say? That no one's going to milk the cow on Shabbos? What are you supposed to do? So at the time, they said that obviously we're going to have to get a non-Jew to do it. Oh, but it's Amir Lenachri, how can you do that? Yeah, it's Amir Lenachri to save you from Tzar Balei Chayim, from making the animals be in tremendous amount of pain by not being milked on Shabbos, and therefore we would allow one to violate the Isser of Amir Lenachri, which is an Isser Rabbanan, as to be able to save themselves from the Isser of Tzar Balei Chayim, which is an Isser Daraisa. I do remember, I think at the time that my father taught us about this whole dispute in the 1930s, he didn't teach us in the 1930s when he told us about the issue that came up then. So I remember that he said that one of the issues that was raised was that it's Avodah Zarah. So people didn't understand. What do you mean it's Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah means you're serving, you're worshiping idols. What's Avodah Zarah? How does that have to do? He said, no, the staunch Zionist said, you're not allowed to hire a Palestinian to work for you. That's Avodah Zarah. That's getting somebody to work from outside the community. That's considered Avodah Zarah. Having an outsider work instead of hiring a Jew, you're hiring a non-Jew. So obviously in this situation they had no choice. What are you going to do? On Shabbos you're going to have Jews who are going to milk the cows. That's not permissible. So you're going to have a non-Jew do it, and that would be Amir Lenachri. That's permissible b'makom Tzar Balei Chayim. And for that matter, it doesn't really make a difference whether it's my animal or someone else's animal. If you see an animal in pain and a Nachri is able to help that animal from relieving the pain, I would be allowed to do the Isra of Amir Lenachri, whether I'm the owner of that pet or that animal, or somebody else is the owner themselves. What about when it's a psik resha? Now, what is a psik resha? Psik resha means the Gemara has a situation where the children used to have very boring Shabbos afternoons. Summer months, what are you going to do? Hashkama minyan is over. Sometimes, you know, you ever go to Eretz Yisrael, Hashkama minyan is at like 6. The regular minyan is like 7:15, right? Like the latest minyan you could get to is like 7:30. It's like a really, you know, that's a late teen minyan. So you come home from shul at 8:45, 9 o'clock. What do you do the rest of the day? Yeah, from 9 o'clock till 7. So the Gemara says they had the same problem back then. The problem was, what are the kids going to do? So, you know, they had a great game they used to play. What was the game? They used to play ball. The problem was they didn't have a ball. So what did they play with? So it says they used the head of a chicken. They used to throw it from one kid to the other. That was the ball they used to play with. Very strange reality, but that's what the Gemara says. That was the game. Oh, so we have a kid who comes Shabbos afternoon, and he says, I'm so bored. I don't know what to do. Father says, go get the head of the chicken, go play ball. Kid says, how am I supposed to get the head of a chicken? I didn't prepare it before Shabbos. So the father says, oh, that's a problem. Kid says, oh, I have a great idea. Why don't I just go cut the head of a chicken off now, and then I'll have a ball to play with. Father says, what do you mean? Sintilas neshama, you're not allowed to kill the animal on Shabbos. He says, no, I don't care to kill the animal. Theoretically, the animal could live. I don't want the animal to die. I just need the head. It's too bad. So the Gemara says that's a psik resha. I understand that you have no interest in the animal dying, but that's obviously what's going to happen. When you cut the head off, even though you have a very different intent in mind, obviously this is going to be the outcome, this is going to be the consequence, and we would not allow you to do that. That is what's referred to as a psik resha. When I do one thing, but my intent is really for something else, but I know that the outcome is going to be X, which is a malacha, that is considered a psik resha, which is not permissible on Shabbos. Am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something on Shabbos that is only a psik resha? For example, if I know that the light is on in the refrigerator, would I be allowed to ask a non-Jew to go open the refrigerator door when I know that the light is going to go on? Now, I didn't ask him to turn the light on. All I asked him to do was to open the refrigerator. Of course, when he opens the refrigerator door, I know that the light is going to go on. So is that legitimate? Is that allowed? Is that permissible? Or perhaps is that something that I would not be allowed to do on Shabbos? So that is something that the Shulchan Aruch talks about, and it says, Rav Moshe writes over here, that if I would be asking the Nachri to open the refrigerator door when I know that the light is going to go on, that would not be a problem at all, that would be permissible, because that is only a psik resha. I'm not asking the Nachri to do a malacha explicitly, I'm asking him to do something that's allowed. I'm asking him to open the door. It so happens that when he opens the door, this is what's going to happen. Another example that I remember happened when I was living in Washington Heights, there was somebody who came to visit his parents out here in the Five Towns on a Friday, and his parents, I think his wife was very close to her due date, the parents decided they're going to do them a favor, and they're going to cook them a whole Shabbos. Fine, very nice, picked up the food, he drove back here, he left everything in the car by mistake, and now it comes Friday night, his wife comes out of the room and says, oh, you know, like, what happened to all the food? He says, well, this is what happens when you leave me in charge of everything, and all the food is in the car, so he didn't know what to do. So I told him, you're allowed to go to the super, a non-Jew super, and ask him to open the car door. And even if the car is locked, plenty of the locals in the Heights know how to open the doors anyway, not a problem. So I said, just open the door, ask the Nachri to open the door, and get the food out. So he says, oh, but the light is going to go on. We all have these cars where you open the door, the light goes on. So safety mechanism, whatever it is. So how can I ask the Nachri to do that? I said, no, that's exactly Rav Moshe's tshuva. The same way Rav Moshe says that opening the refrigerator door, when you know that the light is going to go on, but all I asked the Nachri to do was open the door. That's not a malacha per se. I know that the outcome is going to be a malacha, but that's not really my intention. So in a situation like that, that would be permissible. The same would be over here. I left my food in the car. That's certainly a tzarech Shabbos. It's certainly something that's permissible. I'm allowed to do amir the Nachri. Problem is, when I have the Nachri open the door, which is muktzah, the light is going to go on. That's a real malacha of havara. That's a real malacha of turning a light on. That's not permissible on Shabbos, but since I'm asking the Nachri just to open the door, and the unintended consequence is that the light is going to go on, that would be something that is a psik resha. And a psik resha by Amir al-Nachri is going to be permissible. So, Mirz Hashem.